This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. And coming up this hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And of course, we're going to continue to look at the postseason games coming up this weekend in the NFL. I used to be a big fan of Championship Sunday. Look, I love the Super Bowl, but, you know, I grew up at a time when the Super Bowl could be real dud. You know, like you wouldn't get in always the best matches, but I always found tremendous value in the championship games, right? You get one game and then followed by another game is a full day on Sunday. These divisional rounds this weekend are really must-see TV. I mean, if you were to skip one, I mean, maybe Titans-Cincinnati, but I think you're going to be missing out on a good game there. But I think look at each game and look at what the narrative is for each game. I mean, you've got a young Joe Burrow. Derrick Henry's coming back. You've got Aaron Rodgers and possibly his last run with the Packers. We'll see, right? Needing to get back to that Super Bowl after a 10-year absence, going up against a 49ers team that good against the run, a quarterback they don't really want. And then, of course, you've got Tom Brady and the Buccaneers taking on a Rams team and mortgaged everything in the future so that they could make a Super Bowl run this season. And then, of course, the nightcap, Kansas City and Buffalo, that we've been talking about this morning as that what is going to be the next or should be the next rivalry in the AFC that we're going to be pointing to for a couple of years. And that's a big if, right? Because, again, look at what Burrow is doing in Cincinnati. Look at what we're seeing with other teams trying to find their niche and rise up. Justin Herbert with the Chargers. And maybe eventually down the road, Trevor Lawrence will have Jacksonville in a good position. We'll see. But it's just, I think these four games all have a special storyline that is worth your attention. Now, again, probably if you go back and look at all the years of the divisional round, you could probably say the same thing. But I just find this year, I'm more excited about this year than I've been in a long time for all four games. Whereas in years past, I've felt like there have been a couple of duds in the divisional round. But I think the NFL is really set up nice for a good weekend. And they better, because last weekend wasn't very good at all. In which we had six games. Some of them were really, really played poorly. Some of them, the officials got involved. But others were just yuck. We still don't know what Arizona was thinking Monday night. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Ah, good, the bad, and the dumb Friday edition, divisional round weekend. But we don't get you just the football. We get you the good of the day. What's the good of the day today?
You know what? Today we're going to have a little fun with this, with the good, the bad, the dumb. Because the first one is good, right?
Right.
With some bad. And then the bad will be so bad that it's dumb. And then the dumb is so out of this world that it's actually, I think it'll be good.
I actually followed that.
You're right? So you're with me?
I'm with you.
So the good of the day is going to Tori Yorgi. Tori Yorgi. She is a reporter for WSAZ News in the Huntington, Charleston area in West Virginia.
Yep.
She was doing a live report when she got hit by an SUV.
I saw this. This was unbelievable.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, I mean, the sound of it sounds horrible. Here it is.
Unfortunately, in freeze thaw, we see this. Water main breaks.
I just got hit by a car, but I'm okay, Tim.
That's first for you on TV, Tori.
Woo! We're all good. I'm okay. Yeah, you know, that's live TV for you. It's all good. I actually got hit by a car in college, too, just like that.
Wow.
I am so glad I'm okay.
Yeah.
You're okay. You're okay. We're all good. This is, you know what? It's one
sure
woman
you're
band.
Okay, Tori?
We're good, Tim. Ma'am,
you, sure you're
you
okay?
are so sweet and you are okay.
I am so
okay. It is all good. You know, oh, Lord.
So you
know, it's my last week on the job, and I think this would happen.
That last part's great.
It's fantastic, right?
That's super. I love the way she's consoling the woman that hit her.
I know. I mean, it's must-watch video because she gets drilled. I mean, the car's not going that fast, obviously. And she's reporting about, you know, hey, icy conditions, winter weather, you know, that whole thing that we're all dealing with right now.
Right.
And this car just like kind of just slides slowly towards her, but enough to knock her down.
Yeah, sure. I'm one of those people that think if I hit a person, I'm like, I'm going to prison.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Like I don't care if they die. It doesn't matter if they die or not. The fact that I hit a person, they're just going to arrest me.
And can we give it up to her, too? Because if you noticed in that entire clip, not one beep.
Yeah. She didn't swear or anything.
Yeah. On the other hand.
I also would have needed the dumb button and the sensor button. Yes. As if I got hit by a car.
Yep.
I tell you, I am not surprised by this story. I've never seen it, but I'm not surprised. If here in Nashville, when we get a snowstorm, they send these camera crews and these reporters out,
yeah,
and they're right on the edge
right
of
the
highway. They are right on the road, and they're like, hey, let's go to Bob Reynolds, who's down by I-840 and 65. How are you, Bob? How are you? As you can see right here, this is the highway. As you can see right here, this is slush. I'm picking it up right now. As cars are coming by, it is not easy to drive on this, and I'm like, could you just get out of the way?
Yeah.
I can't believe how close you are.
Can't you do that same filming from a parking lot that's adjacent to a main road?
Cars are still whizzing past me despite the wintry weather. I'm like, get off the highway. What is wrong with you? I know it feels like it would be a great shot, but we're all petrified for you.
Yeah.
As these cars are streaming in. So, yeah.
But good on her. Last week on the job, this is how she goes out.
I know, it's great.
I love the fact, like, I got hit by a car like this in college, too. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
I know.
Maybe, you know, reporting's not your thing.
I've never gotten hit once, and she's already been hit twice in her life. It's crazy.
I may have had a little love tap from someone. That's about
right,
it,
but that's not being hit by a car.
My
heavens. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
It's the bad of the day that is so bad, so horrifically bad, that this has got to be one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Okay?
Okay.
So there's a company called Space Entertainment Enterprise. They're the company that is behind Tom Cruise's new space movie.
Right.
Where they're literally filming the movie in space. Well, they announced yesterday that they have plans to launch a sports arena and production studio in zero gravity and hope to have the project completed by 2024.
Ooh.
Now, I ask you, what's the point?
Why are we doing that?
What would sports look like in zero gravity? I mean, do they have the ability to make gravity work? Because, okay, the only sport I can think of would be basketball. That'd probably be the easiest one to do, right?
Well, that would be fun.
But you take a shot, the ball's never coming down.
Not going down, right.
I don't understand what the point is of this. Are you playing?
And when do they want this up?
2024.
That's like 2 years away.
Yeah. Can we put our efforts to something else that is actually, you know, could save humanity instead of, hey, you know what would be fun? Let's put a sports arena up in space.
I've kind of lost my, I don't know what it is, but I'm with you on this. I remember being a kid thinking we were going to colonize Mars and all of that. Like I still think we are.
I don't know if it's in our lifetime.
Not in our lifetime.
Yeah.
But then I start thinking, very unlikely that we will. It takes a while to get there.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to need, I mean, obviously technology exponentially gets better. So what I envision today is nothing, you know, it's like what we say all the time. Like, if you bring back somebody from the dead to have an interesting philosophical conversation with George Washington, he would mentally break down over air conditioning.
Right.
I can't fathom what 100 years from now is going to look like in terms of travel.
When I think of
big rockets, they're like, no. 100 years from now, we're going in like small jet cars. They're just going to burst into space.
Just look like in our lifetime alone. I mean, you and I grew up in an era where, you know, having a home computer was almost a luxury.
Luxury, yeah.
And now we carry one in our hand.
Right. Exactly. So I can't say we're never going to do X, Y, or Z because, again, the internet is like 20 years old, right? 30,
yeah,
whatever it is. And it
25, 30 years old for the average person. And that idea never even crossed my mind when I was in the library using the three decimal system. I never thought I would be able to access all the world's knowledge on a cellular telephone.
Yeah. Right. I always thought you were going to have to check out, you know, if you're studying something, you would always have to go to the library to get some microfiche.
I remember my son, not a couple of years ago, I told him he needed to watch Apollo 13 because I'm like, if you really want to watch science in action, watch Apollo 13. Like, there's that one scene that always hits me in that movie where Ed Harris is standing in front of a group of engineers and he's like, we got to get this to fit into this using this.
Yeah.
And you go, and it, like, whatever it is, you know, however he phrases it, and they just dump out a bunch of junk that's available within the spacecraft that they don't need anymore. And then the guy with the glasses is running in with the unit and the instructions. And he's like, this is how we get the filter for the oxygen. And then they're in space and they're doing like calculus with a pencil to figure out how to get home. Right?
Tom Hanks is worried. He's like, you know, I'm a little sleepy. You know, can someone check my numbers?
Right, exactly. Like, it's such a great science movie on guys who just never gave up ever to save those three guys in space, and they used it with their brains. And yet, even those guys, if you found the real life versions of those guys and said, "What do you think 2022 would look like?" they probably still wouldn't have come up with what we have today.
No, they wouldn't. Right? I mean, it's unfathomable to think.
And they were
on the
cusp of technological advances.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, they were, like you said, they were figuring out all these real-life problems without computers.
Right.
Today, it would just be like, well, let's just punch it into the computer and see what the computer spits out.
Why not? Exactly.
So, yeah, so, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll
sports
see
arena and space.
Sports arena and space.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Not really.
I don't know what sport you can play in space.
Alan Shepard tried to play golf on the moon.
Yeah, that ball's still circling.
Right. All right. What is the dumb/good?
Yeah, the dumb of the day slash good. There is going to be, you probably heard about this, there is going to be a Weird Al Yankovic biopic.
I saw this. Yes.
And you saw who was cast in the lead role.
Daniel Radcliffe.
And that's why I say, when you first hear about it, you cannot picture Harry Potter playing Weird Al at all. But I know he's a trained actor. It's probably going to be really good.
Can I say something here? I'm actually looking forward to this.
Exactly.
And the reason
that's why
I'm so looking forward to this.
You never would have put, you know, hey, you know who to play Weird Al? Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter. That just makes sense.
I think, and I could be 100% wrong on this, okay? I could be totally wrong on this. I think the story of Weird Al Yankovic and his journey to create these parody songs has got to be interesting, right?
Oh, I think so.
Like the way he had to get the permission and some artists didn't want to give it. And then some artists were overly joyed to give it. Like Mark Knopfler wanted to play guitar on his parody of Money for Nothing. Like he said, I'll give you the rights if I can play guitar on it. And Weird Al was like, of course you can play guitar on it.
Yeah.
But Coolio didn't want to give the rights to Gangster's Paradise, which became Amish Paradise, and there's like a conflict. He said, I never gave permission. Weird Al says, oh, no, you guys did. We go through this with like a fine-tooth comb. Like, I would wonder the behind-the-scenes. I think that would be kind of fascinating.
Especially the beginning.
Yeah, the beginning,
like,
where he's like doing
like
stuff
when he comes
with
out with
Eat It and whatnot.
You know, Eat It was probably what his first mainstream hit that everyone paid attention to.
Yeah, I think so.
It's like, what was the process of saying, you know, going to, like, I don't know, maybe it's Quincy Jones, who held the rights or whatever, whoever the music artist was, like, yes, we want the rights to the song. It's going to sound everything similar, but the lyrics are going to be different.
Yeah.
And we're going to be making fun of it at the same time.
And we're going to make the videos almost exactly like it, but with the twist that we put on the song.
Yeah.
Like, he was so good.
Yeah.
He's incredibly talented.
And, you know, I mean, he is. And Weird Al, I mean, not short of any jokes, he says, when my last movie, UHF, came out in 1989, I made a solemn vow to my fans that I would release a major motion picture every 33 years like clockwork. I'm very happy to say we're on schedule.
That's awesome. That is great.
So that's why, I mean, it's dumb because you never would think Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al.
No, not at all.
You know,
not
I mean, first of all, I think Weird Al, isn't Weird Al like 6'5" and
yeah,
Daniel Radcliffe's
I think he's
like,
kind of tall. Yeah. plays the accordion, man. Like, yeah. He is so good.
But I think it's one of those, I think it's going to be sneaky good.
I think it's going to be sneaky good, too. Let's hold out hope.
Yeah.
Let's hold out hope.
Now, does Michael Richards come back?
Ooh.
To reprise his role, who do they get to tell? Because yeah. You know they're going to bring up UHF. They
sure
have to.
They are. Of course they are.
Who do they get to play Michael Richards? Because
God,
that movie. Movie is so stupid. By the way,
I have a friend of mine I grew up with when we were like kids in the 80s, like 8, 9, 10 years old. He is now a rock musician. He is on tour and he's with a band and. You never would have thought, like growing up, like you never would have thought he would be like a rock drummer. But I remember, like we as kids tried to make up songs, like make up lyrics to songs like Weird Al. We were so impressed with what he was doing. Like it was so cool to listen to the way he transformed those songs into something funny. Yeah. Oh my God, I'm looking forward to that. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb, and the way you put it was the good and the bad and the dumb and the good. All of that was fun. It's the Friday edition of the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Actually, Michael in Atlanta makes a good point. So he says, I disagree with you, Charlie. I think the guys that served on Apollo 13 would think we're behind in technology today. Let's remember, we were scheduled to be living on the moon in 1999 and driving flying cars by 2016.
True.
I think you're right. That's true. You're absolutely true. Right. I'm going to amend my earlier statement.
Yeah.
That even though I'm impressed with the fact that I have the world's knowledge at my fingertips, I think the people of Apollo 13 back in the 60s or 70s, or what was it, 70, 69, 70? No, it had to have been after 69 because it was the 69 was they were going to the moon and people had already gone to the moon. So
let's think about it. 1985, we all thought that we'd be, you know, there'd be flying cars.
Right, we're supposed to.
Pizza would, you know, you could put a small little pizza in this little oven, and then within 5 seconds, you had this gigantic pizza.
So you're
fruit
right, Michael.
Would pop down from the ceiling.
They probably did think that by 2016 we would have
but
a flying vehicle.
You are correct that George Washington couldn't think of anything else. It's like, why is there's AC in here?
I honest to God, I think
you have artificial light.
I don't think people really, really understand. If you think you could bring George Washington back and say, I would love to bring George Washington back and have a conversation with him about his thoughts on the country.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to start that conversation. He would be so blown away by the world we live in now that he wouldn't even want to be like, why do you want to talk about that piece of paper? I want to talk about why it's comfortable here when it's summertime. What are we doing? What's this cube in my glass? How in the world is it? What are we talking about? This is amazing.
Yeah.
Like everything that you could do.
What's that white thing that's on the wall?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly. Like where are the candles? Like how is this happening?
Yeah, and you have a rope coming from that white thing in the wall leading to this thing that's lit up. What how explain that?
Exactly. Much, you know, like we wouldn't if we went back to his time because we have history. So we would know that, you know, maybe the food isn't going to be the freshest tasting in the world.
Yeah.
Right. Or whatnot. And, it, you know, and everybody went to bed when it was night out because there was nothing else to
do. Nothing else to do.
Right. So you just went to bed when it was dark. But he would be just enamored with what we were doing. So, yeah, exactly.
He would go crazy over ice cream.
I think he would go crazy. I think he would go crazy. I think air conditioning would be the biggest thing.
True.
Like for somebody who's never experienced air conditioning, and I think him to walk into a room and have it be a nice, like to be outside at 90 degrees and then walk in a room and be like, oh, it's a little chilly in here. That's crazy. I think that would blow.
Let me adjust my wig.
Yeah. I think he'll be like, wow. We were sweating our tails off in the convention in July of 1776. And now I'm in here. I need to take my jacket off. It's so cold. Yeah. I think it would
and then great. We would all freak out because we've never seen him without a jacket.
Yeah. I want to bring this up because I went down a YouTube rabbit hole the other day and I found somebody is posting complete games from the 80s on YouTube. Full broadcasts of the some playoff games. And I don't watch all of them because they took out all the commercials, so they come down to like an hour plus. But I had a chance to watch yesterday a lot of the Freezer Bowl game in the 1981 played in 82 AFC Championship game between the Chargers and the Bengals. And Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen were on the call. And we want to talk about Cincinnati and their history, right? Their failure to win a playoff game for 30-something years. But in the early 80s, when they had Ken Anderson and Chris Collinsworth and whatnot, they had a game against the Chargers for the AFC title where the wind chill was minus 59 degrees. Oof. And at the beginning of the game, because I remember it as a kid, but I don't have a strong memory of the game, but I was watching it. NBC had Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen on the field before the game, where they could do their lead in, and they were freezing to death. And then they finally got to go to the booth, and they showed like Forrest Gregg, who was the head coach of the Bengals. They had a guy putting Vaseline on his face because it was so cold. It was absolutely frigid. And you could feel the cold through the broadcast. You could feel how cold it was. The wind. Dan Fouts' first pass, he was throwing a short pass to the sideline. He was throwing it into the wind. The ball ballooned up and went out of bounds. It just floated up and out of bounds because it got caught in the wind. It was intense. And it was incredible. And they make the point that the Chargers went from 84 degrees with 100% humidity the week before in Miami in what is the greatest game of all time, the divisional championship, divisional round game between the Chargers and the Dolphins, to minus 59 with the wind chill in Cincinnati. It's the greatest differential temperature a team has felt in the NFL playoff run. To go from hot,
probably
sweaty,
flew,
cramping.
And probably flew back to San Diego.
Probably
first.
Yeah. You wonder. Yeah, they did. They probably went from Miami to San Diego. So they went from Miami to San Diego and then to Cincinnati in the frigid cold weather.
God, I can't even imagine.
And I had a chance to watch the Charger-Dolphin game on that too. So whoever's doing this, thank you. Because it was a lot of fun, you know, kind of reliving these old games.
I gotta check. I've seen the Chargers-Dolphin game plenty of
times. Charger-Dolphin game is amazing. Yeah. The Charger-Dolphin game is so incredible. It even watching it again, it was fascinating to watch the Chargers dominate that game, and then Don Strock came in, and the Dolphins tied it, and then they went back and forth, and the overtime, the effort that each team made in that game, it should have put them. Both of them could have gone to the Super Bowl.
Is this what we're kind of hoping Chiefs Bills is going to
be? Yeah, that kind of level.
This is what we want.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a high score. It was 41-38. You know, it won in overtime, but I think that's what we're hoping for is just that all out effort. You know, would Travis Kelce be helped off the field like Kellen Winslow?
Like Kellen Winslow was. I had a friend of mine in college, and he in South Carolina. And he said he was a kid, and his father, they went to that game at the Orange Bowl. And he said what he remembered the most was on the hook and ladder play that caught a touchdown just before halftime. He said the whole stadium erupted and stayed loud and cheering throughout the whole halftime. So they had a halftime show and everything. No one was paying attention. They were all losing their minds over that one play that got the Dolphins back in that game. Oh, it was remarkable. But that Freezer Bowl, if you have a chance to see it, if you ever just want to feel cold coming through your television, don't watch like Empire Strikes Back at Hoth. Don't watch the Freezer Bowl clips of Dan Fouts blowing on his hands to keep him from warm and Forrest Gregg getting Vaseline on his face. I don't know, to prevent it from freezing and breaking off.
Just
it was that cold.
Looking at it, the one line that gets you is that the difference in weather, like you pointed out, an effective difference of 125 degrees.
I know, right? Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Golly. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. We come back more, a detailed look at the playoffs as we roll along on a Friday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. And you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. I will get back to the NFL and the divisional weekend coming up. One bit of news out of Major League Baseball. The league and eight-owner panel has pulled the plug on the stupidest idea, which was the Tampa Bay Rays splitting time between St. Petersburg and Montreal.
Bummer.
Because the owner was like, oh, you know, I can't make enough money in St. Pete, and I was wondering if I could take my team and play half games in another city. Wouldn't that be cool? And here was the cool thing about this little proposal. The league originally said, because it's run by the owners, sure, fellow owner, explore that. That sounds like a good idea. And then the moment that they needed to pull it, they went, yeah, we're not going to let you do that. Because the players were like, yeah, can you just let me know how that's going to work? Do I have to buy two apartments? Like, like, what am I going to do? Like, when we're up there, where do I live? Are you going to provide housing? Are you not going to provide housing?
And the timing is off, too. Because if memory serves me correctly, Toronto did not play any home games until, what, September?
Right, exactly.
They played all their home games in Buffalo. So where are you splitting time, St. Pete, if you can't play in Montreal?
Well, and the other Tampa? Thing, too, you know, listen, if you want to keep trying and trying and trying because you love this Tampa-St. Pete area, God bless you, right? But it's been around since 1998. We've had 20-plus years of this baseball team in that city. It has never caught on. It has never caught on when they went to the World Series. It has never caught on when they're good but failed to get to the World Series. It just does not do well in that area. It's a city that is split by a bay, by three, four bridges. People don't like to go across the bridge to St. Petersburg for a ball game. It's in a revitalized downtown, but it is still a downtown. Parking isn't all that easy. It's kind of a hassle to get to. And even though the Rays are good, it's just not a thing that is catching on. Now, if you're the owner of that team and you love that area, okay, I know it's not, you don't want to pick up and leave. I get it. But where this came from was he wanted nearly $900 million for a stadium in Ybor City in Tampa. And that, I think, would have done well, but he couldn't get the funding for it. He couldn't get the public funding for it, and he couldn't get sponsor money for it. So that venue option was out. So then he came up with this idea. Now, some people thought he wasn't really serious about it, right? That it was more of a subtle threat. Like, hey, Tampa, St. Pete, if you could step up to build me a new stadium, by the time my lease is over in 2027, then I'll be okay. But until then, I got to look at all the options. And I think for me, if I'm owning a baseball team, and this is just me, if my team stunk and they were in last place and I was getting 5,000 a game or whatever it was, 2,000, 3,000 a game on weekdays, I would be like, I get it. We stink. It's not a great venue. It's not a great place to watch a game. And we're terrible. Okay. But if I was able, through my general manager, to put a team together that is championship worthy, that keeps my payroll down, I would want what comes from that. Energized crowds sold out throughout most of the season. I'd want an enthusiasm level for my team that allows me to print money. And he's not getting that.
Now, my other question is that, was it a mistake of which city he chose?
Montreal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because since, they had really poor attendance, too, and had a team stripped from them. Would it have made more sense if he went, say Nashville? I know Nashville doesn't have a football or a baseball stadium.
But if it did.
Would that make more Charlotte? Would those.
Charlotte's a good place, too.
Would those make more sense or have the realization that the threat is real, that I'm going to move this team out of the city.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like owners moving teams. I don't. But there are certain circumstances where I say, well, you look at what's happening here.
Yeah.
I get it. Build me a stadium. Okay, you don't? Well, bye. But a lot of times it's, man, I've done everything I could. I put a good product out on the field. We're winning. We're winning the East. We're winning the AL. We're going to the series. And yet I can't get enthusiasm. It's not attendance even. It's enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Like you can't even get the city overly excited for it.
I mean, for every, you know, we've talked about it before, like, you know, the Rams moving from St. Louis to L.A. or the Chargers moving from San Diego, like, they were all sour situations. Browns moving to Baltimore. There was right. a sour situation. This is, though, one of those is like, I don't even, Tampa's won't even miss it.
Yeah. Will they even miss it? Are they going to cry when it's gone and then wish they went to more games? I don't
and
know.
Is it because of the location of where the stadium is, or is it because of the transplants?
Well, there's two thoughts to this, right? Again, my wife being from the area and my family, my in-laws living in that area, this is what I've heard from them and some locals. But that could be just one of those local excuses that doesn't really bear much fruit, right? Which is, you know, yes, the city, the Tampa-St. Pete area is divided by water. And there's two bridges, and people just don't like the crossing over the bridges yeah. to the other area to go to things, except for Buccaneers games. And this, if you, Tropicana Field is located at the bottom end of the peninsula. So if you look at St. Petersburg, it's at the bottom end of it. So you not only have to cross a bridge, you got to drive all the highway all the way down to the bottom. My father-in-law and I at Thanksgiving, we drove around downtown St. Pete because he wanted to show me all the new stuff that they were building. They've really revitalized it. We drove by Tropicana Field, and I remember going, they still haven't done anything around here. They still haven't done like they still haven't made this attractive. Downtown St. Pete is nice. Nice buildings. They're building condos down by the water, upscale eateries, all of that. But where the baseball stadium is, it's still like yeah, it's still kind of dumpy. They're not revitalizing that part of it, and parking is becoming more difficult. If you're working in an office in Tampa, and somebody goes, "Hey man, you want to go to the Rays game tonight? I got two tickets. I'm not going to use." And you go, "Okay, parking's kind of a pain. They're playing the Reds or whoever. It's July. You know what? No, it's going to take me forever to get there." Like, you'd probably go, nah, no, I don't want to, right? Because, you're already contemplating the hassles of going to the game. Whereas if it was great parking right next to the stadium, an easy walk over, a good time, stadium was nice, aesthetically pleasing, easy to get to, you'd probably go, yeah. But if you start already in your head thinking of all the problems of going to a game, you'd probably go, no. And I think that's what they're suffering from. The Ybor City plan was nice. It was right there at a place people like to go to. Could have been, but it was $900 million and they didn't want to pay for it. Nobody wants to pay for these things. There's right. Nobody wants to pay for stadiums. So, but I'll tell you right now, and I Charlotte, Nashville, these are just southeastern cities. I got to think Portland. They wouldn't move to Portland. They would probably just stay in the south. But if they took that same level team, that same championship level team, to either one of those two cities, they'd be packed every night. Every night, especially Charlotte.
Yeah.
Charlotte's been dying.
And that's why that leads to the other conversation is there just too many transplants down in Florida where.
That's another truth.
You know, where, I mean, you know, I think it was kind of embellished or made fun of. I don't know if, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people from like the East Coast or Northern United States retired down to Florida. That's always been a thing. Will probably always continue to be a thing. So they bring their own fandom. I mean,
sure they do.
You know, but the fact is that when you look at the stadium itself and when the Rays are playing against the Yankees, it's not a sellout. I mean, there's a lot more Yankee fans, obviously, but,
right.
you know, they're still having trouble filling seats.
Before Brady arrived in Tampa, because now, obviously, it's totally different. But before he did that and the Buccaneers weren't all that great, my father, who's retired down there, went to two games with the Giants. He's a Giants fan. He saw the Giants play twice there. Both times, he said, you could not believe how many Giant fans were in that stadium. It was loaded with Giant fans.
I believe it.
Loaded with them. And that was when the Bucs were not very good. Obviously, completely different now. He said, I couldn't get a ticket if I wanted to. But here's the thing. It was so bad. He the first year he went down there and the Giants were coming, he called over there to buy tickets. He bought tickets. He got on their list. He got calls all the time to buy packages. He finally had to tell the kid, I just wanted the Giants.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in seeing them play Jacksonville or anything like that. But now, of course, Brady's there and it's changed. It's just you're right. There's a lot of trans. I think that's one of the reasons hockey does well down there. I think there's a lot of people from the north that like the sport, and they either bring their own fandom or they don't have a problem jumping on the local team in the city they now live. And by the way, that team is now pretty good. So that's here in Nashville. Nashville Predators are popular. They're really popular. The joke is, oh, you can't sell hockey in the South. You can sell hockey in the South if there's already a base of people that get it because they've lived somewhere else that had it and they liked it there. Yes, a kid growing up in Tennessee in the 80s before the Predators arrived may not be into it. But kids today in Nashville are because the Predators have been popular like since they got here. So now you've already built in your fan base. I think that's why the Lightning are good down, do well down there, because there's a lot of people who like the sport. They're good. It's okay to root for them, and they go there and they like the game. So there you go. But baseball, you would think, but for some or whatever reason, they can't fill that place up at all. All right, it's Tony D, Ron Culver, as we continue along with Wake Up Call. Coming up next hour, Frank Schwab is going to join us, Yahoo Sports. We're going to get more in-depth on the NFL playoffs coming up this weekend. Again, we're continuing on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing here on Wake Up Call here on your Friday. Thanks for joining us again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's, as we continue to look at the weekend's games coming up. Aaron Rodgers and the San Francisco 49ers. Man, if the 49ers pull this off, are we gonna really go into an NFC championship game going, well, that Jimmy Garoppolo? I don't really know. I mean, I'm not really sure about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Well, would the storyline be this? Right, if the Niners somehow pull off the upset win over the Packers, we would want the Buccaneers then, right?
I think we would, yeah.
So we had Jimmy versus Brady.
I think we would. I think that would be the better one. What if the Rams lose? And what if the Rams lose? Are we going to criticize their? I don't think you could criticize their approach. I like teams that are all in. I like teams that are willing to go, screw it, I don't care.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't criticize the – you're talking about the moves they made? No.
Yeah, the moves. The moves to go – the moves to sacrifice so much of their future to put a team together that can win the Super Bowl today.
Yeah. No, I don't think we would –
because
how can
there's
we?
No guarantee – like, here's the thing. The Rams didn't say, if we do X, Y, and Z, then the algorithm will work our way. They knew that it's always tough. Mm-hmm. You can put the best team out there and lose. They knew it still has to be decided on the field. But what they said was, you know what? Here's our philosophy. Our philosophy is this. We want to trade our draft picks for established star players. Not guys that we're grooming. Not guys that may not work out. We want guys who know how to win and play right now, and we'll take our chances. And if it works, we win a championship. And if it doesn't work, that's the price you pay for this. That's the risk you're taking. We are bold. You know, fortune favors the bold, as Matt Damon keeps telling me every 5 minutes on that crypto ad. That's what they're doing, right? And I remember saying this at the time. We cherish the NFL draft as a fan. As fans, we love it. We want to go to it. We want to watch it. We want to celebrate with it. We're excited about it. We're going mock drafts. We're looking at guys. Who's going to be the stars? Who's going to bust out? And the Niners were like, yeah, those are important, but I have to take some kid out of wherever and groom them to be a role in 2 or 3 years. When 2 or 3 years, what am I going to have? How much of this currently am I going to have? I don't know. So I'm gonna mortgage that to win now. And when they look at where they're at, right? They're in a city that, while embracing them, you know, they had to come back to the tradition of the Rams. They built this huge stadium, costly stadium. What they were looking at was the economic value of winning a championship right now far is greater than any draft picks that we sacrifice in the future. Because what we need is a championship to sell the stadium and this team, to permanently put in place where this team is in the city of Los Angeles. And I think it was bold, and I don't know if it's going to work out, because I don't know if, you know, I think they obviously can go beat the Buccaneers. I don't know if they will. but I like the approach. I like it. Now, because I also I think we value draft picks a little too much sometimes, right? I've said this about rooting for your team to make the playoffs, even though your team is flawed, right? If you're fighting for a playoff spot, you're picking in the middle of the pack. What's a couple of spots? Go to the playoffs. See what happens. I mean, what are you that interested in the draft in April that picking, you know, 16th is better than picking 18th? Like, you know, these are stupid debates. Go to the playoffs, even if your team really, really stinks and is going to be out in the first round easily. And the Rams, I think, took it one step further. If I can get Von Miller, why not give up something in the short term for the little bit of the future for this? Because the Rams are like, look, even if I don't have draft picks, I can still sign free agents. I can still put the team together the way I want. I can still figure out a way financially to keep the players I want to keep on this football team. And let's see if it plays out. So you got the Rams and their approach. Brady and the Buccaneers trying to repeat. Jimmy Garoppolo, the QB nobody wants, still trying to sell himself to the rest of the NFL because the Niners are like, thanks for everything, but bye. And then you've got Aaron Rodgers back to pursuing a Super Bowl appearance that's eluded him for over a decade now. What an NFC I just laid out for you, Ron Culver, for this weekend. Oh, forget the fun of the young quarterbacks in the AFC. Think about those storylines for a second.
The old guys.
The old guys. Exactly. Did Bruce Arians feel old when he looks around and sees Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur kicking around?
He's got to.
You go, oh, my goodness. Look at these guys. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And then Kyle Shanahan as well. All right. It's Tony D, Ron Culver.